Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm excited to have Rita Gandhi here from Studio Graphene. And we were just chatting before we started, and we totally align on some of the philosophies around human-centered and user experience. And looking forward to the conversation. But Rita, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I'm Rita. I'm the founder of Studio Graphene. Started the business about 11 years ago. We're an AI native digital product studio. So we design and build custom software for an AI native world. Prior to that, I worked in capital markets, essentially investment banking, but on the consulting side. So I worked in Accenture and another consultancy called Capco, building trading systems and investment banking technology for a number of tier one investment banks. And then went to the other extreme and worked with very early stage startups in Studio Graphene. And more recently, we're working with, I'd say, a lot of sort of mid-tier clients or mid-cap clients. And that's quite an exciting space at the moment.
Yeah, great. Yeah, so your journey from consultant to founder, like what were the pivotal moments or insights from your early consulting career influenced how you built Studio Graphene as a digital product and AI innovation studio?
So I think one of the biggest learnings I had was that I consulted for very, very large enterprises, so large investment banks. And I realized there were some of the smartest people I'd ever met who worked there. They were all driven and intelligent and wanted positive change. But it was an ecosystem that didn't facilitate innovation at speed. Just because, you know, there's regulation, there's bureaucracy at scale. And I learned the sort of, in my mind, that there were missing ingredients to make those businesses innovate. And the main thing was that sense of independence and freedom to fail. Every program had to succeed. It had to be done very diligently over many years. There wasn't any kind of prototyping and trial and error and freedom to fail. And so I saw, you know, what you need at that scale, but I also saw that if you want to innovate, you need to create almost a separate innovation engine or setup that allows people to fail, experiment, and take risks.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's a culture where, as you said, to really kind of create, take risks and explore. And so that's pretty good insight. Like you've written about Studio Graphene being AI native. Like, how do you define that term in practice? Like, both internally on your workflow, externally with client products.
Yeah, great question, because I think that that term is being thrown around at the moment. It means different things to different people. I think to us it means reimagining everything in a world where we now have AI. And earlier, just as a simple example, you know, there'll be points of your workflow that you look to automate or improve improve things from an efficiency standpoint. But what we're trying to do is, what if you could reimagine how you do that entire workflow? So a simple example I'll use is, if we are trying to prototype to test an idea, previously, you know, we'll build a proof of concept of some kind, quickly to go out there and get users to give feedback. And we might use AI or other technologies to expedite that process and increase the speed at which we build things. But actually, in an AI native world, we can build the entire prototype using AI. And that's called, in my mind, reimagining how we do things, in a way in which we plan for utilizing AI from essentially a ground up practice. And rather than AI being embedded into our workflows, it's more as though workflows or those activities are embedded into the AI capability.
Yeah, that's a important distinction. And it's different than building regular software that's deterministic, like, and AI's systems just being probabilistic in nature. How has that reshaped the way you guys design, test, and build product?
So it's a great question because I think the future of all software is a mix of deterministic and probabilistic software. So I don't think we see anything which is purely probabilistic, and I think in the near future we won't see anything that will be purely deterministic, and the two will work in sync. I think it's about putting guardrails and where there is extreme risk of sort of catastrophic event if a piece of software doesn't perform exactly as expected. I think one has to be more careful, and the risk tolerance needs to be lower, and it needs to be more deterministic. But there are elements where you can be more probabilistic, and you can take a higher risk, and you can say, look, I'm 99.9% certain in this outcome, because it opens up effectively a wider feature set that we've not been used to having previously. So it is challenging. People talk about hallucinations, etc. But I do feel that the constant improvement of AI models, it means that the effectively that applied statistics element where your chances of getting something wrong are lowering every week or every month. So I think in that probabilistic world, we also have to realize that in a strange sort of way, it's moving more towards a deterministic world purely because of the level of accuracy and improvements in AI that are happening.
Yeah, no doubt. Like we even find it difficult. Like, how do you know when to ship? Like, what kind of quality assurance, or even if you get it right, like there can be so many answers and so many different ways of doing things with the LLMs. Like, do you guys have a framework, or how do you know when to ship when you're dealing with probabilistic kind of outcomes?
So I think one of the things that there's a paradigm shift in is QA. How do you check stuff and how do you determine if something's accurate? Because also what we have to remember is we're not building those probabilistic algorithms, right? Those, let's say, a large language model that's underpinning a piece of software, that might be changing. So if you're inspired with OpenAI through APIs, etc. So that might itself break something because you've not tested against those changes. I think what we are realizing is that it goes back to making sure there, let's say a login and password, right? Registration, that's deterministic feature sets. So those things are only being shipped after we've tested and we're sure they're accurate. On the probabilistic side, we effectively do a lot of, in our minds, what people would describe as sort of, or in effect, what the kind of traditional product manager would do, which is test behavior, right? See if does this conform to how a user would expect to see this result. And so it's a lot less like in a deterministic world, you have a set of test cases and you go step by step and you test everything. And in a probabilistic world, it's more just general testing, generally trying to break things, generally trying to see where there are edge cases. And we have to just be aware that we're going to ship something that's it's not, there is no definition of perfect in a probabilistic space. So yeah, I think your risk tolerance needs to be higher.
Yeah, it's very difficult, like, to reach a certain quality or certain experience level, because it's people and their experience using the software, and like, is it delivering what the promise is? And yeah, I don't think there's any easy answer to when we're dealing with probabilistic outcomes. I'm looking for
Sure.
one, but I mean.
Yeah, it's a really like it's so like I use the kind of comparative description of deterministic versus probabilistic all the time because I think that's literally what we're contending with here, a world where there's deterministic and probabilistic software at the same time. And I think throughout history we've been used to deterministic software, we've not been used to probabilistic software, right? So everyone's thought of software as zeros and ones, and for until very recently that was the assumption that all software is zeros and ones. And this is just a completely new way of thinking. But I genuinely believe that involves a bit more risk, because yes, there is a chance that the output or outcome may not be exactly as you intended in a small fraction of scenarios.
Yeah, then maybe change the subject just a little bit, like AI and data leadership. Like, what core leadership skills or cultural practices are essential for organizations to truly become data-driven, beyond just buying AI tools, like roles, governance, metrics? Like, how do you look at that?
So I think a slight contrarian view I have is that a lot of businesses have set up, AI evangelist teams or, an AI division, so to speak, within themselves to get to roll out AI, so to speak. And my contrarian view is that doesn't work. I think the responsibility to leverage AI and data within the organization rests with everyone. So, let's say Studio Graphene, we're a digital product studio. We have product managers. The way they use AI is very different. Our engineers, the way they use, so, product managers might use AI, they might use Lovable to prototype and test an idea, but our software developers might not find Lovable useful. They might find Cursor because they're actually writing and shipping code. So they might find Cursor more useful. Our designers might find UX Pilot more useful. Our finance team, finance and op team, ops team might find other tools more useful. But I think if we had one overarching team that's rolling out AI tools, even, right, they will have one particular perspective. Whereas you need everyone to use data and AI from their own perspective and their own vantage point. So I think that responsibility needs to be distributed across the organization for it to be effective.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And what frameworks or KPIs do you prioritize when assessing whether an AI or data initiative is delivering real business value?
So I think it determines it's based on which division within the business is using AI. But I think the so within so we built software and custom software, and we've built a tool that measures various productivity KPIs like and quality KPIs like number of defects, number of or defect reopen rate in a particular sprint. And PR wait times, et cetera. So we have those metrics around the productivity and quality of the software we build. We also have metrics on the AI utilization. So for example, Cursor, et cetera, on a Teams plan will send us data on how much we're using it, so to speak. And we try and marry that data together to draw inferences. So we try and determine if we're using it effectively, because if we're using AI more and our quality is going down, and the quality metrics are, let's say, a defect open rate, then the inference there is that AI is not helping. Whereas if we're using it and our productivity and quality metrics are going up, we say it is helping and keep heading in the right in that direction. So we draw inferences based on AI usage and productivity and quality metrics for that particular discipline.
Yeah, that's smart. That's good. And you spun out Telsyn, a SaaS product from Studio Graphene, from like your service expertise. Like, how did that transition teach you the difference between building bespoke solutions versus building scalable products?
So, I think it's been really educational. We've tried to spin out multiple different products. We're also in the in, we're also piloting Pulse, which is another product we've created, and seeing if it has use in the outside world. I think the biggest lesson I've learned from spinning out Telsyn is that when you build bespoke software, you're building it for a range of clients. It might be a large enterprise, it might be a startup, it might be in financial services, it might be in retail. Whereas I realized with spinning out a SaaS product, you need to be hyper focused on who your ICP is and who you're building it for. You can't be as diverse in your client cohort, especially in the early days. In the early days, you need to go kind of zero to one in a particular ICP. So what I've realized is the more we focused on a particular ICP and defining a particular ICP, for instance, large scale caterers, et cetera, we've actually done better. So that's been really interesting. Like being hyper focused is helpful. And the second thing is we're a product studio and we design and build products, but we don't really understand how to sell or market those products. And actually, Telsyn's given us a really useful feedback loop and understand the perspective of sales versus a marketeer of the products we build. And I think that knowledge is actually going to make us a better product studio.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to get growth and go to market motions. It's even when you get good at it, it's hard. You have different ICPs. It's never easy.
Correct.
There's no like a playbook solution there. It's a lot of like listening, learning, adjusting.
Exactly.
So I'm curious, like there's all these crazy words that people are using out there, like AI is going to eat software or the death of SaaS. Like what's your point of view on all these grand statements?
It's fascinating. I think it for most businesses like ours, it's an opportunity and a threat. It's undeniable that it is having probably the most transformational impact on the work we do since I started my career. And so I do believe in the fact that it's going to have a change things. And I believe that these statements, like the one you've just made, come from a point of view that AI is underhyped, and it's going to have more impact than we realize. And I think, you look at some other elements and you might think AI is overhyped. And I think both points of view can be true at the same time. So, people use the analogy of the dot-com bubble. It was a bubble and it was overhyped and it was over, the internet companies were overvalued. But at the same time, it was also the most transformational technology of our lifetimes. And, the internet is and websites, et cetera, have transformed everything we do. So I think that's what's going to happen with AI. There are, maybe statements like it's the death of SaaS are overhyped and it's not true, but it's the death of the SaaS businesses as they stand. And will we have a new type of SaaS business? I think that's true, right?
Yeah.
So I think the change it's going to bring about is true. But the fact that, it's going to destroy SaaS and custom software, I just think that's not true. Like, I'll give a simple anecdote as an example. For the first time in many years, App Store submissions have actually grown because people are now finding it easier to build apps because of AI. So actually the number of apps being submitted to the App Store and going live in the App Store after having stagnated for a few years, the last few years, is actually growing.
Oh,
So,
wow.
is it that there'll be actually more SaaS businesses? It should just be they'll be smaller and more niche and more focused because you don't need the same scale. So I believe that building software will become more accessible, both in terms of price and required skills. But I don't believe that necessarily means it'll go away or SaaS will go away. It'll just change.
Yeah, that's a really good point of view. So, how about as companies race to integrate AI, what practical guardrails do you recommend to ensure solutions are trustworthy, aligned with customer needs? What's your point of view there?
Yeah, I think the scary thing and the thing to be really careful with is security around your data, right? Effectively, you have to give a large language model access to your data for it to draw an inference and give you some information. So, what you're giving access to, I've heard a few horror stories around it recently, but I think what you're giving it access to has to be carefully managed. I think that's a really important thing in my mind. But as for the rest, I think once you put guardrails around security and data security, I actually think it's really important to give people the room to experiment. And I think trying to push top down a requirement to use AI in a certain way is a wrong approach. For it to be a top down decision, you have to use this tool and in this way. I think right now we're in these early days where a lot of the AI capability is a bit like the dial-up era of internet. And I think we have to give room to for folks to experiment and grow. So I think as long as the guardrails from the data security perspective, I think the implementation should be very distributed and have create a lot of freedom for individuals and teams to make decisions independently.
Yeah, I mean, it's so tempting just to give it data and context because there's so much value you get back once you do that. And it's almost hard, like, to put guardrails around it. It's like you want productivity, innovation, you want to leverage the intelligence of the LLMs, but it is getting harder to have data security, and it's just so tempting. It offers so much value. I don't know. It really is not a question. It's more of a statement. I'm just, but have you thought about how, like, okay, if I said that to you and I'm working for you, what would you say to me?
So I'm definitely at the end of the spectrum where I'm trying to encourage everyone to use AI. A really simple example, meeting note taker applications. I'm trying to encourage everyone. I'm like, it's just tell the person that you're taking those notes using an AI tool and use it. So I'm much more of the, let's take managed risks. But there are other ends of the spectrum. And really, I realize there are sort of people in three sort of buckets. One that feel threatened by it. And see it as a risk to their careers and so on. And maybe they don't even realize that that's how they feel, but it's a subconscious feeling holding them back. The second are people who feel it's not really helpful and find flaws in it and be like, see, this, it's rubbish at doing this, and so it's useless. And the third are people who see its potential, and yes, maybe aware of some of the downside issues and risks, but just would rather take those risks and go all in. And I think I sit more towards the let's take some of the risks and use it and identify some of the and benefit from some of the ways in which it makes us more productive.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I mean, you want to push it and get the value, understand its limits, see its capabilities, and it for sure helps you execute whatever you're trying to get done better. And but yeah, it's a difficult question. It's a difficult thing.
Yeah.
So, like, looking ahead the next 3+ years, like, what trend or capabilities in AI and data do you believe most profoundly will reshape how products are built, delivered, experienced?
So the one trend I think we're going to see is the user interface is going to change. We've had the iPhone user interface for the last 18 years. We've had the same web interface for a couple of decades, or more, and I think that's going to change because of the way we interact. We're going to, so I think the second trend we'll see is much more multimodal interaction. So right now our interaction is through a screen where we type stuff and we click on things. I think the multimodal example is we'll also talk to the screen, right? We'll say stuff rather than type it because speech to text will be just so high quality and accurate. We might use gestures and so on. So I think the interface and the layout of the user experience will change. I think also interactions will be more multimodal. I think we are going to see just incredible productivity gains in every way, how we build software, how fast we build software. And I think that will create a lot more niche use cases. And that'll just mean that we will be able to build something for a particular use case that previously we thought wasn't worthwhile building something for. So we'll see that change too.
Yeah, I wonder how long it'll take or what area of society will kind of go along with that trend. Because, like, today, I mean, I use AI a lot, both personally and professionally, and it has so much memory of me and my needs and what I do, and which is so beneficial. So the more you use it, the more it knows about you. But then, how do you make the distinction between the personal memories versus the business context? And then, as we get new interfaces, whether it's, Apple doing the pin or OpenAI doing something where it's always listening, seeing, I don't know. What do you think about society's kind of, like, who will accept this, and at what level? And yeah, it's a new world. Because of the
It's a new
value, there's
world.
so much value, but then there's also so much danger.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I think there is, I think as a society, we're going to sadly see some of the dangers and negative consequences of AI at some point. There'll be certain events and so on. I can't predict it. I don't think anyone can with any degree of accuracy, but we all are scared that there will be something that will happen because of someone misusing it. And I think that's our balancing act, because on one hand, there are great gains and productivity benefits. You know, people talk about the fact that in the future, you know, it'd be easier to find a cure for certain types of cancer. And that's an incredible advancement. And then equally, people will find it easier to harm people because of AI. You know, things like people are saying the cyber attacks are growing, and so on. So I think we have to somehow make sure the good outweighs the bad by multiple, by a huge, huge margin. But I do think as a society, I don't, you know, when people talk about the fact that we need to be aware of the dangers of AI and do something about it and act, I completely agree. We should.
Yeah, and I think there's like, just like social media, what it did to our kids, these AI companies have so much memory and insight into you, like you as a person, and then you as a professional, that like if you're a spy agency, you would love to have all that data. I mean, you know so much. It's unbelievable how smart with context and it knowing what the questions you ask and the data you give it, whether it's professionally or personally, and that's quite scary. It's like, for me, it's like, yeah, I don't want anyone creating some biological weapon or something, but it knows so much now about you, and it's so enticing because like it helps you so much, and so you're enticed because of productivity and
To give it
value
more.
to give it more. The more you give it, the better it is. But then who owns that? Like, who owns that data? And like, there could be bad outcomes, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen, but yeah, we're on a crazy transformational time. I mean, the biggest. I've been doing this almost 40 years, and this is the biggest. It's yeah, I'm more opportunistic than pessimistic, but a lot of challenges ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, what question didn't I ask you that you might have? Oh, I wish Dean would ask me that. Was there a question I didn't ask you?
I guess the question that comes to my mind often is, will the benefits of this technology and of AI be distributed evenly or reasonably evenly and help society as a whole?
And what do you think?
I do think it will benefit everyone. I do not think it will benefit everyone evenly. At least at the moment, that seems to be the trend. So, you know, but that's capitalist world. But yeah, we are seeing obviously, you know, even things like stock market valuations, the increase in value is concentrated amongst the top 5 to 7 businesses on the S&P 500. So at the moment, it feels as though it won't benefit everyone evenly.
Yeah. And then
But
there's different ways
I
to look at
hope.
it too. There's benefit to society, benefit to individuals, benefits to companies, benefits to capital markets.
Yeah.
But I think you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, it just society means some will benefit a lot more, but everyone will benefit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Read them. If people want to get in touch with you, how can they reach out to you?
Yeah. So my email address is written at studiographene.com, and I'm also on LinkedIn, and you can look me up on there, and I'd be happy to be messaged and respond.
Excellent. Well, thank you for sharing your point of view at this, crazy time that we're all in. So I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Really enjoyed it. Thanks, Dean.
Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional, and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.